Meet Reed L. Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Welcome to On the Right Side with Reed Lance Rosenthal. That would be me. And today's show is going to be terrific. First of all, big welcome to all my listeners. A big welcome to all the new listeners from KGAB, 650 AM, Cheyenne, and their affiliate stations. Glad to have you with us. Second week of broadcasting with you great folks. You know, this week we're going to talk about, well, number one, we're going to finish up the incredible dialogue that we started last week on Obama's czars. We only got a portion of the way through the list of these terrific folks who are deciding what to do with our lives, our taxes, our homes, our private property, our freedoms, our livelihoods, you know, the whole nine yards, with, of course, no say by us and no say by Congress. And remember what our president said when he was a candidate, repeatedly, judge me by who I associate with. That's a quote. Quote, judge me by who I associate with. Also, we're going to have, of course, tidbits to torture. Boy, I got some things. They are absolutely going to set your hair on fire. Your eyes will cross on a couple of these. Your adrenaline will be going. And we're going to talk a little bit about the upcoming shows very briefly, because they're going to include some things that I don't think a lot of you have heard about, but which are looming on the not-too-distant horizon, including one called Agenda 21 from the United Nations. Evil. That's the only way you can really describe this deal. I mean, it will affect Colorado and Wyoming and the Rocky Mountain states particularly, along with several other areas of the United States. Basically, we're going to be giving up our sovereignty to a bunch of folks who don't like us, who believe in global dominance. But more on that later in the show. Right now, we're going to get going here, and we're going to talk about czars, more czars. I told you last week that I was going to save the best for last, and true to my word, I have. We're going to start off with Kenneth Feinberg. Kenneth Feinberg is the pay czar. Oh, the pay czar. He gets to regulate how much people get paid. Uh-huh. Terrific. And, you know, Mr. Feinberg, he happened to be chief of staff to Ted Kennedy. You know, once again, the linkage between all these top Democrats and the Socialist Party, the Communist Party, extreme left liberal politicians, and funding by a few left-wing groups, mostly emanating from George Soros, is undeniable. And scary, I might add. We've been asleep at the switch, folks. We need to wake up. Kenneth Feinberg, he gets to determine if people are getting paid too much. Now, I guess his authority doesn't extend to Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, where Mr. Obama's buddies got $12 and $13 million bonuses. You know, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, they caused the entire financial meltdown when the Democrats in Congress decided that everybody should own a home, even if you didn't have a job, you had a 500 credit score, and you didn't have a down payment. You know, that Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. It was, if you step back and think about it, and I'm going to digress just a moment because it's a really important point. If you step back and think about it, the whole subprime mortgage thing, where 5, 6, 7 million people got mortgages who shouldn't have gotten mortgages, and the screaming and yelling by the Democrats when the Republicans tried to shut it down four times, 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004, and a fifth time when John McCain introduced legislation to curb in those subprime loans at Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae in 2005, but it was voted down by the Democrats. That was the first attempt to redistribute wealth in the United States of America, but via mortgages, because Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae at that time were quasi-governmental agencies. The taxpayers were on the hook. You know, it's kind of like, shall we say, socialized incentive and public risk. In other words, unlike private industry, where you have private risk and private reward, when the government gets involved in things like GM and Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae and Chrysler and all those goodies, which just are not goodies at all, what we have is we have socialized incentive at taxpayer expense. It's a big difference. So anyway, that's Kenneth. Kenneth, why don't you go on over to Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, which we now own 100% of, and they're $400 billion underwater, and why don't you kind of, you know, bang the dinner bell over the bonuses over there? What do you think? Think that would be a good idea? We haven't heard from Kenneth on that. Haven't heard from Mr. Obama on that either. And then we have Cass Sunstein. You know, Cass Sunstein could well be one of the most dangerous men in the United States. The guy is brilliant. He's a lawyer. He taught constitutional law with none other than Barack Obama, our friend Barry. And he is really a master at drafting rules and regulations, and it's from his office, the Rules and Regulation Office. He's the regulatory czar, that most of all these regulations come to us. You know, about 5,000 regulations last year. I think there were a couple months there were six to 900 regulations per month, and every one of them affects you, even though you don't hear about them, you don't know about them, and you don't have a say in them. Mr. Sunstein is an interesting character. As the director of the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, there's another one of those big names, Mr. Sunstein published a paper. This was like in 2003. Go ahead and Google this up. Okay. Human life, according to him, varies in value. It varies in value according to the age and ability of the person. I think that means the ability to pay taxes. And we talked about this last show, believe it or not, this published paper by the regulatory czar, Mr. Sunstein, says that the statistical value of a life year, that's a quote, should be measured for every human being and every American citizen. And depending upon the value, you know, your statistical value as a human being, according to the government, that will determine how much health benefits you get. You know, whether you get that heart replacement, that liver transplant, that hip replacement, whatever. And, you know, if you're just too old or you're too young and you can't produce and you can't pay taxes, sorry, buddy. Sorry, ma'am. No do for you. We can't help you. Bye. Have a nice life, short as it's going to be. Yes, that's Cass Sunstein. So Mr. Sunstein is, kind of an unusual character. To give you a little bit more about him, we're going to spend more time on him and one or two others than any others because they're the most dangerous and the scariest, and they have the most power in the whole, shadow government that Mr. Obama has very adeptly set up under our nose while we've been asleep at the switch. He believes in the theory of nudge. Okay, in fact, he developed the word. It's in his writings. And as progressives, okay, a very misleading term. They're very good at that. As progressives, they believe that progressively they're going to nudge us towards socialism and communism. And remember what Van Jones said, you know, drop the radical pose to achieve the radical end. These guys have gotten really, really, really good at this. And Mr. Sunstein believes that he's going to nudge us towards socialism. And he's going to nudge us, I quote, away from the U.S. Constitution. Read his books. I mean, his books, this is published stuff. He believes that free speech needs to be limited for the common good. That's a quote. Free speech needs to be limited for the common good. I think he's thinking about the common good of the political elite and their socialist agenda. But anyway, by the way, that's called the First Amendment of the Constitution, you know, free speech. So it kind of ties in with this whole theory that he wants to nudge us away from that troublesome document that's worked very well for 234 years. Oh, and he thinks, here's that thread again. Remember we talked about the five threads last week? You know, gun ban, limited health care, etc., etc. You should listen to that show if you haven't. Well, here we go. Private gun ownership should be eliminated, according to Mr. Sunstein. By the way, he's working very hard behind the scenes with Mr. Obama under the cloak of darkness, which they're really good at, to do just that. You gun owners better wake up or they're going to come a knocking. They will. Oh, he also believes very strongly in cap and trade. Yeah, you know, they need to reward all their friends like George Soros and Goldman Sachs and other folks with that $10 trillion little plum called the cap-and-trade exchange market, the carbon exchange market. So he's a real big believer in cap-and-trade, which, by the way, will regulate about every aspect of your life, and I mean every aspect of your life, and probably put, it's estimated, 33% of the businesses in the United States of America out of business within 12 to 24 months. So say goodbye to your job. Boy, then you might not be a productive member of society, and then your statistical value as a member of the American community might go down. Oh, boy. Mr. Sunstein doesn't stop there. He believes in total ban on private gun ownership. You know, there's that theme of the czars again, along with controlling your health, controlling your life, controlling your energy consumption, controlling your food intake, etc. Control is the key word. More money for them, more control over you. They're kind of synonymous. Anyway, he also believes, he's like a huge fan of the EPA. He loves the EPA, and he loves cap and trade. Now, cap and trade, if you remember, is how the government's going to reward their crony friends in business, like Goldman Sachs and George Soros, and Al Gore and all those folks, with that lovely little plum that all comes out of our pockets called the carbon exchange market. That's part of the cap and trade bill. A $10 trillion windfall for those folks who have their little fingers in the pie. And guess what? You and I don't have our fingers in the pie. No. We supply the filling for the pie, which they suck out through their straws. Anyway, he also believes that the Fed should take over all water sources, I mean down to the tiniest springs within the continental United States and Alaska. You know, only the federal government knows how to run the water deal. And, you know, if you think about it, it might be something to do with control too, because water is kind of an important thing. We got to drink it. I don't think we can live without it. And we can't grow food with it. Who do you think's easier to control? Just sit back and think about this. Is somebody who's broke and hungry and thirsty easier to control than somebody who's well off or at least comfortable, who has food and plenty to drink? You know, that answer is kind of easy. So if they control the basics, they kind of control you, don't they? And that's what Mr. Sunstein's all about. He's about controlling us at our cost, by the way, using our money for the control over our lives. It's kind of obscene. And Mr. Sunstein, many of you have probably heard, if you have any friends in the farming or ranching community, about the Clean Water Restoration Act. I mean, it's unbelievable. I will tell you some stories on future shows, personal experience, and you'll just sit there and think I made it up. But the Clean Water Restoration Act, which is this overreaching grab by the federal government through the EPA on all water everywhere in the United States, you'll never guess who wrote that. Mr. Sunstein. That's right. You know, one thing about Mr. Sunstein, you have to give him credit. He goes out and does what he says he's going to do. You ought to get his books. Don't buy them. The guy does not need the money. He does not need another penny from your wallet. Find them in a used bookstore, Google them up, read excerpts. Maybe one of your friends has them. But know thy enemy. Now we come to John Holdren. Oh, yeah, we talked a little bit about him last week, too, just a tidbit. But John Holdren is the science czar who has no science background whatsoever. And when I say whatsoever, I mean whatsoever. He is an ideological environmentalist. He thinks that U.S. business has caused world poverty. Yes, that's right. The United States is responsible for the poverty in the world. Aren't you shaking in your boots? Don't you just feel terrible? I mean, I think you should go down right now, empty your bank accounts, Sell your car or donate it. Take all the furniture out of your house and break it into kindling and donate it to the poor. Because it's your fault that they're poor. I want you to understand that. Okay. So now that we're on the same wavelength as John, let me tell you a little bit more about John Holdren, because he's rather remarkable. John Holdren, his official title is Director of the Office of Science and Technology Policy. Another one of those short little names. He's written a series of textbooks, and he insists that the federal government should put sterilization chemicals in the water supply, force pregnant women to have abortions, and, as I said last week, they should I'm trying not to laugh here because it's really not funny. They can regulate, and they should regulate, exactly who may be allowed to reproduce. Kind of ties into that statistical value theory that Mr. Sunstein has, don't you think? They all kind of tie in together into a very ugly tapestry for the United States of America and everybody who lives in it. You know, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to have a quick word from our sponsors. And those sponsors are Rockin' SR Publishing of Cheyenne and Northgate Publishing of Texas and Midwest Trade Books of New York.
It is the spring of 1855. America is on the cusp of her great westward expansion and, reluctantly, on the threshold of becoming a world power. The promise of land, freedom, self-determination, and economic opportunity is known worldwide. Immigrants from every continent are eager to exchange their lives of drudgery and emptiness for the hope and romance of a country embarked on the course of greatness. This is the setting of Threads West, first of eight books in Reed Lance Rosenthal's number one best-selling, award-winning epic series of the Saga of the American Spirit. Follow the adventurous men and strong women who love and struggle in the beautifully vibrant but unforgiving landscape of the West. Threads West, available at Barnes & Noble, Hastings, and many local bookstores, and as an ebook on Kindle, Nook, and iPad. Threads West, and to reserve the second novel in the series, Maps of Fate, coming in February or March, go to ThreadsWestAmericanSaga.com or MapsOfFate.com.
A word from our sponsors. I think I recognize my name in there. Thank you, folks. I appreciate that a bunch. Now back to the czars. Okay. The next czar, Earl Devaney. He's the stimulus accountability czar. How'd that stimulus deal work out for you? Let's see, it was $887 billion. It went over that by $42 billion, according to the General Accounting Office. And that, of course, doesn't include the interest, since we borrowed 40 cents of every dollar of that stimulus bill, probably from China. So, including interest, we have over $1 trillion we spent on stimulus. Everybody out there listening, you got more money in the bank. Tell me, how was it great? Huh? Should we do more of it? What do you think? And this guy is the accountability czar. He has spent his career trying to take guns away from American citizens. Wow, where have we heard that theme before? Maybe in the czar show, Oh, and he believes in open borders to Mexico. Wow, I think that's working out pretty good, don't you? And he believes that the U.S. gun stores are to blame for drug traffic and deaths and the absolute uproar going on in Mexico right now. You can only call it a war. Gee, you think that ties into this Fast and Furious deal? I wonder. So we have Mr. Holder, the Attorney General, and then we have Obama's czars. They all want gun control. Mr. Holder lets 2,000 or so weapons kind of out of their sight. Doesn't put tracking devices in it, unlike the previous programs by Bush, which, by the way, Bush discontinued because they were failures, and that was with tracking devices. And then these guns start showing up and creating violence. And then, of course, Mr. Holder flat out lies to Congress. Of course, nothing will happen about that, but that's kind of the key. Anyway, Mr. Earl Devaney, who should be accounting for the stimulus bill, which didn't do anybody any good other than China, is busy promulgating taking your guns away and making sure that you can't get ammo, you can't get weapons, and that we have open borders with Mexico. Then we have J. Scott Gratian. Oh, goodness Gratian. He's the Sudan czar. I'm sorry. You know, a czar for Sudan. I mean, give me a break. This is your tax. These are your tax dollars at work, folks. Let me tell you, and mine too. Okay, he's a native of the Democratic Republic of Congo. All righty. Great, man. He's from Congo. He's looking over the Sudan. He kind of throbs and lives and whatever in the White House. You got to love it. He believes that the United States of America does little to help third world countries. Oh, my God. We don't do anything to help other people on the planet, don't you think? It's that same theory. We've caused all the poverty, we've caused all the wars, and we don't do anything to help. Ah, shame on us. Shame on us. Oh, and he also thinks that we should all pay, I'm not making this up, we should all pay higher taxes than the United States, and those extra tax revenues, no, they don't go to reduce the deficit. They go to increase support to the United Nations. Remember that theory when we talk over the next 2 weeks about Agenda 21, which is bubbling in the United Nations and which is already starting to infiltrate its way into the rules and regulations, even down to the local level in the United States. It is scary. Let me just tell you, it is scary. And we now have Herb Allison. He's the TARP czar. So we got a stimulus accountability czar and we got a TARP czar. Boy, good for us. Everything must be going really smooth with all these people looking over things, don't you think? You're gonna really like Herb's background. Hey Herb, how you doing up there? Because the guy who's in charge of looking out over all the money that bailed out all the banks and AIG and all that fun stuff that you've heard about, okay? The TARP is different than the stimulus. The stimulus was $1 trillion wasted on pretty much political payback, drafted by Van Jones and the Apollo Foundation. We've gone over this. I'm not going to beat a dead horse. TARP was at $750 billion, unfortunately started under Mr. Bush, but finished up very nicely by Mr. Obama, which went to bail out banks and went to bail out brokerages and went to bail out AIG, who had reinsured all the nasty pieces of mortgages from Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae that the banks, who got into trouble, had sold to the entire planet, which is now in trouble. It's amazing how all this works. You'd think it was maybe part of a plan. I bet it is. We're going to talk more about that in future shows, too. Anyway, Mr. Allison, who's in charge of the $750 billion in the TARP fund, he's the former CEO of Fannie Mae. If Hollywood did a movie on this, nobody would watch it because they'd think that somebody made it up. So, the guy who ran Fannie Mae into the ground for $180 billion got paid tens of million dollars in bogus bonuses that the other czars who are supposed to be watching didn't watch, and who really is probably one of the five top people responsible for the U.S. recession. You know, by using real estate mortgages to back up the United States stock market and sell them to overseas banks. And, by the way, causing millions of people to lose their life savings. I'm sure that many of you listening right here are in that unfortunate situation. I know it sure impacted me. Okay, this is the guy who's in charge of the TARP. The TARP czar. And then John Brennan. John Brennan is the terrorism czar. Now, John Brennan has since left, as you know. But John Brennan was an anti-CIA activist before he was appointed to be the anti-terrorism czar. That's right. An anti-CIA activist was appointed to be the terrorism czar. I wonder why, I think it was 3 weeks ago, plus or minus, you can Google it up, find out the exact date, but the Department of Homeland Security came out with a report. It was kind of buried. You know how all these little really important tidbits get buried on you? And they decided that when that major, you know, who screamed God is good, in Arabic, and then gunned down 13 servicemen at Fort Hood 2 years ago. And I think Mr. Obama came on and said, oh, what an unfortunate accident. We don't have any proof that this has anything to do with terror or, you know, Muslim extremism. And then you never heard another peep. Well, guess what? The Department of Homeland Security has issued a report as of 3 weeks ago, buried under stacks of papers released on a Friday night, that says, this really wasn't terrorism. It was just another unfortunate incident of workplace violence. Not making that up, folks. Go ahead and Google it. So, 13 servicemen get gunned down by a Muslim extremist, and it's a workplace violence incident. Okay. I'm glad that we have a terrorism czar. In addition to being an anti-CIA activist, Mr. Brennan, he had no training in diplomatic or governmental affairs. Zero. And you would think that the terrorism czar probably has to deal with others on things. Yeah, you know, other countries, that kind of stuff. He's another guy who believes in open borders to Mexico. You know, that's kind of a common theme. You would almost think that they wanted more people to cross the border than are crossing it now, with absolutely no restriction whatsoever, so that they could do what? Oh, I don't know, maybe take American jobs, undermine the financial stability of the country a little bit more, move a little closer to that orchestration of crisis theory by Cloward and Piven, which we've talked about many times on this show. You know, you collapse capitalism by overburdening it with financial entitlement, and from the financial ruins, you build your socialist utopia. Well, that could be it. Or, you know, or maybe there's just no threat of terrorism. What do you think? Because, boy, we can't see our government admitted anywhere. Oh, and Mr. Brennan has suggested that Obama disband the U.S. military. Gee, what just happened a week ago? Let me see. It's funny how all these threads kind of tie together if you follow them over time. So the terrorism czar says, let's have open borders and disband the military. And last week, Mr. Obama goes down and addresses the nation from, you know, the Pentagon. Very unusual. And he tells us he's going to cut the military by $489 billion. He forgets to mention that because the 12 senators couldn't get their collective act together because they're too incompetent and unpatriotic to do it, that there's already $500 billion being cut out through what's called sequestration from the defense budget. So we're talking about a $1 trillion cut in defense over 10 years. That's not to say there's not waste that we couldn't save on, but $1 trillion? Let's see, with China on the rise, Putin coming back to power in Russia with dreams of expanding once again the Russian Empire, what's going on in the Mideast, Iran? Oh, this sounds like a terrific idea. I think we should disband the military and open all the borders, and we'll all be safe and everybody will like us. Okay, and then we come to Anish Chopra. Oh, yeah. He's a technology czar, except that they have no technology training. Zero. I mean, not 1 minute of technology training. He did work for the Advisory Board Company, which is a healthcare think tank for hospitals. Gee, that should qualify him to kind of, you know, control the internet, don't you think? And he's an anti-doctor activist. Oh, yeah, you know, those doctors, they make too much money. We don't like them. And he supports Obama healthcare rationing. Gee, I wonder if that ties into Cass Sunstein's theory and Holdren's theory. It sounds like all these guys think alike. What did you tell us, Mr. Obama? Judge me by who I associate with. Okay. All right, and then, he believes, oh, my God. He believes that salaried doctors should only work for the government. No more private practice. No more entrepreneurs. No medical anything, actually. Everything medical is run by the government in this guy's little utopia. That's right, including doctors who get government paychecks. That should work out terrific. I'm feeling healthier already. Then we have Adolfo Carrion Jr. He's the urban affairs czar. You'll hear his name again when we talk about Agenda 21 and the UN's plan to basically take control of wide swaths of the United States and the rest of the world, including your private property. And Mr. Carrion, here is the paradox. He's a millionaire slumlord in the Bronx. I mean, he was born in Puerto Rico, been active in anti-American causes since the get-go. He's a member of several leftist groups in Latin America, yet he's a millionaire slumlord in the Bronx. Go figure. It's kind of like that really ugly guy that does the movies, you know. I wouldn't even mention his name because I don't want to give him a plug. But he does all his little movies, makes millions and millions and millions of dollars at them. And then he sits on the TV talk shows on MSNBC and talks about how bad capitalism is. I mean, it makes you want to puke. Anyway, Mr. Carrion, he believes there should be higher taxes on the middle class to pay for minority housing and health care. I think if you're making 200 grand a year, which is like where they want to raise taxes, you're in the middle class. And by the way, you folks who aren't making $200,000 a year, I'm here to tell you, and you remember this show, it's not going to stop with the millionaires and the billionaires who only make $200,000 a year. No, these guys want it all. Okay? The next tax hike is coming to you. Either spending stops and the tax code gets reformed, or the tax hike after this one that everybody's screaming and yelling about is going to be out of your wallet. Trust me on this. It is true. These people have an insatiable greed for your money. They take your money and buy votes for them by giving away your money in entitlements. It is as simple as that. It is not complicated. Ashton Carter, he's the weapons czar. To be kind, we'll just call him a leftist. He wants, where have we heard this before? He wants all private weapons in the United States destroyed. I mean, Cass just wants them taken away from you. This guy wants them destroyed. And he supports the UN. Oh, here we go again, the UN. The UN ban on firearms ownership in America. There can't be, quote, there can't be any other policy, unquote. Agenda 21, the United Nations, global dominance, global governance. Wait and listen to the show. And then we have Gary Samore. He's the WMD policy czar. That's the weapons of mass destruction. He's a former member of the Communist Party, the United States Communist Party. Wow, I feel really good about him being in charge of making policy for weapons of mass destruction. He wants the United States to destroy all weapons of mass destruction unilaterally, as, quote, a show of good faith. Unquote. Let's see, we have open borders, we have take away your guns, we have disband the military, and we have destroy all our weapons of mass destruction unilaterally, getting no concessions, and these guys are running the show? I don't know about you, but I don't feel safer. There's other fun folks in the little czar structure, the bizarre czar structure that Mr. Obama has fashioned in the White House, the shadow government, Mark Lloyd and some others, and perhaps in the future we'll talk to them, I think that you have gotten a pretty good idea of what's going on in terms of who is making decisions about everything about your life. And you know what? They're going to win unless you do something about it. So you need to get educated. You need to check on these facts. You need to stay abreast of current events. You know, even if it's 10 minutes a night watching the news or 10 minutes a day scanning the headlines in the paper, please Get yourself informed. This is real life stuff, and it affects you. It will absolutely affect your children and your children's children. And our country is at risk. It is at risk. We are on the knife's edge of a paradigm shift. And only folks like us can bring us back to what made us great. No discussion of who has Mr. Obama's ear would be complete without two more folks. Number one is Michelle Obama. She has huge influence on the president. A book just came out, I believe it was a Tuesday? Yeah, it came out Tuesday. And I'm sorry, I don't have the name for you because I've tried to find it and I can't. But that book was written by a White House insider. She investigated, and I believe she works for the New York Times now. She talked to 30 people who had been in the administration and found out that, you know, all the upheaval, remember his Daley, the new chief of staff, only a year old, left. That's his fourth chief of staff in 3 years. The two presidents before him, Clinton and Bush, went through four chiefs of staff. It's a grueling job. Over 8 years, Mr. Obama has managed to do it in three. And that's because Michelle is in their face all the time, according to this book. You know, Michelle wants to have the ear of the president. She doesn't like anybody else talking to him. Remember, I recommended that you go and Google up her thesis, Michelle Obama thesis, and you can get an idea of, once again, we'll just go to Mr. Obama's words, judge me by who I associate with. And then we have Valerie Jarrett. You don't hear much about her. She's a person of extreme influence in the United States government. In fact, many people believe her to be the closest confidant to the president and to probably have the highest sway over what he thinks, what he does, and what he says, next to his campaign manager, David Plow. Ooh. But Valerie is like under investigation for all sorts of nasty things in Chicago. In addition, Valerie is a former member of the Communist Party. Valerie has quite the QVC, quite the resume. I'm not going to spend any time talking about her other than to alert you to that name. If you have a few minutes, Google her up. You will be astounded at who is the closest mouth, the loudest whisper in the ear of your president, the President of the United States. Her name is spelled Valerie, V-A-L-E-R-I-E, that's Valerie Jarrett, J-A-R-R-E-T-T, J-A-R-R-E-T-T. Google her up. It won't take you 5 minutes to read absolutely factual stuff, no pundit stuff. This is her own words. This is documented fact, and you can see who is directing the thought process of the President of the United States, along with the rest of his entourage here that we've discussed, and a number more who are just as bad that we haven't discussed. I'm going to remind you that we are on the right side. Yes, we are on the right side, but we're on the Right Side Radio Show with Reed Lance Rosenthal. That would be me. Broadcasting out of KGAB and their affiliate stations, Cheyenne, Wyoming, and Web Talk Radio. And at the end of the show, by the way, we have a new outro, as they call it in radio land. And there's some information for you on how to get into the archives, which I neglected to mention last week. I got a number of emails of people saying they wanted to listen to some of the archives. Your wish will be granted at the end of the show. Now we're going to go to, oh boy, the tortured tidbits segment. And I'm going to start off with one that you honest to God are going to think I'm lying about. Have you ever heard of, let's see, I want to make sure I get this long-winded government nonsense name down. Oh, the Broadband Technology Opportunities Program. Its acronym is BTOP. And you know what funded it? The stimulus program. How do you like that? let me tell you how this all ties in. Number one, the Broadband Technology Opportunities Program, we'll just call it BTOP from here on in. Otherwise, I'll probably keel over. I'll be out of breath from saying the entire name. It was designed to fund the development of broadband infrastructure. And the grants were awarded in 2010. And NTIA, the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, another new agency in the Department of Commerce, manages the grant program. Well, guess what? The BTOP awarded funds for $4 billion. The average grant was $6.2 million. And, you know what the result is? The result, folks, is this. I quote, welfare recipients are now eligible to receive one free new cell phone and 250 free minutes of airtime every month. How's that for use of your tax dollars? Does that kind of make you happy? I'm going to give you a website to go to here in just a minute, but let me tell you more about this great program where welfare recipients get a free phone and 250 minutes a month. It's through SafeLink Wireless, which is a government-supported program through the Stimulus Act. Imagine that. And it provides the free cell phone and the airtime every month. You got to love that. I mean, not just a free phone, but free airtime, 250 minutes. Think about your plan. I'm sure that'll make you happy. So your tax dollars are being distributed to a wireless phone provider to provide welfare recipients with free cell phones and airtime. I thought we were $15 trillion in debt. Am I missing something here? Wow. Okay. Here is the website so that you can check this out for yourself. It is www.safelinkwireless.com/enrollment/public/home.aspx. Let me give that to you again because you really need to take a look. www.safelinkwireless.com/enrollment/public/home.aspx. Boy, wait till you see that site. My, oh my, will you be angry. And you know what? You need to translate that anger into action, and you need to write some letters. You folks in Colorado, write your people. You folks in Wyoming, you folks in Dakotas, you folks in Montana, and anybody here listening around the country or around the planet on Web Talk, write your congressmen and senators. This is insane. This is insane. Do you remember a few minutes ago we were talking about how they want all your money so they can buy votes to keep their power? This is a perfect example of it. Perfect example of it. It's obscene. Oh, and then we have, you're going to hear a lot about this because Mr. Obama is going to try and play to the middle, you know, even though he's a communist, to get reelected. And boy, once he's reelected, Katie bar the door. So that he doesn't look soft, never mind the dismantling of the military and what his czars think about private weapons and, you know, bowing to the United Nations and open borders and all this stuff, he can't look soft. He needs to be reelected. So, instead of doing what he should have done in Iran 2 years ago and doing in Iran what he should have done 6 months ago, which is military intervention, or supporting Israel rather than stepping on Israel's head, which he's really good at doing, the Congress passed a pretty tough sanctions bill. All the money that kind of flows in Iranian oil transactions, which is the only thing that keeps that country afloat, the only thing that finances terrorism, the only thing that allows them to continue with their nuclear program, which could very well be the end of you, me, Israel, and lots of other people, is the sale of oil. And every dollar from the sale of oil flows to the Iranian Central Bank. This sanction would stop all transactions with the Iranian Central Bank. It would effectively halt and completely undermine all of Iran's oil sales. Gee, that's great, you say. Wow, the president's finally doing something. Go, Barry, go! Well, not so fast, because when the bill came out of the Congress, which, by the way, it was passed kind of overwhelmingly, bipartisanly, it was watered down by the White House. Yeah, first of all, it doesn't go into effect for 6 months. And it only goes into effect if Mr. Obama says it goes into effect. And if it doesn't go into effect in July, then it doesn't go into effect for another 6 months. And it only goes into effect if Mr. Obama says it goes into effect. So those 280 days kind of at the sole discretion of the president clauses, which totally gut the sanction in this bill, is supposedly to, quote, study what it will do to world markets, unquote. I don't remember any concern over oil markets before by Mr. Obama. Isn't he the president who has an energy secretary, Secretary Chu, who publicly stated that he wants gasoline prices in the United States to rise to the equivalent of Europe, you know, like $8 a gallon, and who presided over all this green energy nonsense, and who just turned down the pipeline coming down from Canada, and shut down the Gulf, and has bowed to the environmentalists and does not allow drilling, you know, up in the Arctic, and supports California in their ban of offshore drilling, even though the leases from offshore drilling would, over about a 3-year period, eliminate the incredible budget deficit in California, which, of course, Mr. Obama thinks the federal government should step in and pay for using your dollars. Anyway, I'm digressing just a bit. Anyway, on Iran, the bottom line of this deal is it ain't a deal. You're going to hear all this stuff about how the president's getting tough with Iran and these sanctions are going to work and yada, 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 yada. And you know what? It's all BS. Because the president has blocked this sanction. He hasn't implemented it. And he's made sure that in the final bill, only he can implement it. Now, most experts think that Iran's going to have the bomb within a year. Many think it could be sooner. So sanctions that go into effect maybe next July, or if not then, maybe next December, that really doesn't do a lot of good, does it? In fact, if they have the bomb, I think it just might make them a little angry. They're going to use it anyway. Maybe they use it a little faster. So don't be snowed by that stuff. Oh, and you'll love this. January 3rd. This is January 3rd, folks, a week ago. The French oil giant, Total, it announced it was going to buy a chunk of, guess what? The American company, Chesapeake Energy's oil shale gas project. Yeah, that's in eastern Ohio. It's a play in the Utica, what they call the Utica. And they're going to pay like $2.32 billion for that. You know, that's cool. And they're going to have a 25% interest, basically, in American energy. I'm not sure that's a good thing. Oh, and on January 3rd also, this is like another present from the Chinese. They just gave us a whole bunch of Christmas presents. The Chinese giant Sinopec, that's a huge, huge oil company, state-backed, which is buying up reserves all over the world, which is drilling off the coast of Brazil using American money, a $2 billion loan guarantee, to the joint venture between Sinopec and Mr. Soros to drill deep-sea oil off the coast of Brazil to ship to China. Not making that one up either. Google it up. Anyway, that same company, it's going to pay the U.S. energy firm Devon $900 million in cash and another $1.2 billion in future development costs in exchange for 33%, that's a one-third interest, in 5 different shale operations. You know where they're located? Guess what? Louisiana, Oklahoma, Michigan, and Colorado, and Wyoming. So, if you see like Chinese hieroglyphics on the side of oil rigs and oil drilling trucks here in the near future, you'll kind of know what's going on. The Chinese didn't invade us, they just bought us. Let's see, what other things do we have in our tortured tidbits today? Actually, this is a really good thing. I don't know if it's going to survive the Senate, but the Republicans have voted to eliminate the $1 checkoff on your tax returns, you know, where you can check off and contribute to the campaign funds of these morons, none of which should be in office. That would reduce the deficit by $199 million immediately and about $480 million over 5 years. You know, that's like $50 million less than we wasted on Solyndra. But still, it's a savings. The bill's sponsor was Representative Greg Harper. He's a Republican from Mississippi. And, boy, is this a surprise. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid maintains the bill won't even see the light of day in the Senate. Okay. More of the same. Just love it. And then Joe Biden. Oh, Joe Biden, the gift that keeps on giving. He says the Taliban's not our enemy. Nope, they're just poor, misguided people who were just browbeaten and taken over by Al-Qaeda. They're really kind of good guys, and we should talk with them. And at the same time, the White House, about a week ago, you heard it just for a day or two, and then it disappeared. You notice how that happens. They're talking about releasing 5 Taliban prisoners, kind of the top military commanders and spiritual advisors and spiritual leaders for the entire Taliban, from Guantanamo as a show of good faith. You know, it's kind of like that unilateral destruction of weapons of mass destruction, or taking all our missile defenses out of Poland and Czechoslovakia to appease the Russians and getting nothing in return 2 years ago. Yes, so we're going to release these 5 guys, and of course they're going to promise not to do anything bad to us again and love us forever. And that's without even a commitment from the Taliban to negotiate in good faith. Great job, Mr. Biden. No wonder they're talking about Hillary maybe being the vice presidential candidate. Oh, here's another little goodie for the tortured tidbits. This is something you didn't know about Obamacare. There's all sorts of goodies. Did you know there's a 3% tax on the sale of your house starting, I believe, in 2014? Yeah, that's just what the real estate market needs, and it's just what your pocketbook needs. But let's talk about another one, because this is really ugly. Really ugly. I mean, people are just now sifting through the 2,000-plus pages of this absolute monstrosity of a law. You probably heard that if companies have, like, under 49 employees, they have to offer affordable, who knows what that is, I guess Cass Sunstein will figure it out, affordable health insurance to full-time workers, or they can pay a penalty of up to $3,000 per worker. That's going to be the choice companies have if Obamacare lives and isn't struck down by the courts or repealed because Mr. Obama is no longer in office. Ah, here's the fine print. The affordable coverage can only be for the employee. It cannot be for his or her family members. So all of you listening to this right now, I'm kind of in the same situation. My family is covered under a plan, you know, and it's one of the things that kind of makes it legitimate. It makes it worthwhile. It makes it not inexpensive, but should we say relatively cost-effective? Not under Obamacare. That's not going to be allowed. The company has to pay for your health care or pay a penalty, in which case you're on your own, but in no event does this cover your family. So that could be a big problem for many of us, don't you think? And nobody's talking about it. That's kind of a scary, scary, scary thing. And for a 4-person, just to give you an idea, for a 4-person family at 133% of the poverty line, that would be like earning $28,000 a year. The premiums would be capped at 2% of income. In other words, that family would have to pay 43% of its income for coverage without government subsidies, which means it's clearly unaffordable. Gee, I wonder what they do. I bet they go into a government program. Ah, Mr. Obama, you're kind of getting to that single-payer system that you always said you wanted before Obamacare, huh? Pretty clever. I bet your health czars and all those folks are helping, too. Now, here is a bit of good news. I want to end the tortured tidbits with a bit of good news. There was a poll. It was done by Cinevate eNation. It was published by Newsmax and in U.S. News and World Report, I believe, just the other day. And 33% of those polled, their greatest fear is Obama getting reelected. Okay. 16%, their greatest fear is no Obama election. In other words, he doesn't make it again. Wouldn't that be a shame? That's a 2-to-1 margin. That's kind of good for the folks who don't like Obama. 31% fear higher taxes. Here's a really interesting statistic. 38% of young Americans, that's 18 to 24, they fear higher taxes. 28% of young Americans, way up from the 2008 election, fear Obama's reelection. 50% of 65 or older Americans fear Obama's reelection. And 39% of all folks making over $75,000 a year most fear Obama's reelection. There seems to be a common theme here. The major fear in the United States is Obama's reelection. In fact, nuclear weapons in Iran was down around 4%. So I'd say it's a pretty big fear. Hopefully that will motivate everybody to gear up, get their friends to gear up, and go vote next November. And one more word from our sponsors before I conclude. Northgate Books of Texas, Rockin' SR of Wyoming, Midpoint Trade Books of New York.
An estimated 300,000 readers made Threads West and American Saga a number one bestseller and winner of 8 national awards in 2011, including Best Western, Best Romance, and Best Historical Fiction. Threads West and American Saga. Author Reed Lance Rosenthal is a fourth-generation land and cattleman whose cowboy heart and poet's pen capture the spirit of the Western landscape. His long-standing devotion to wild and remote places and to the people, both past and present, who leave their legend and footprint upon America and the American West, is the inspiration for all of his writing. Threads West, the first of the series, available at Barnes & Noble, Hastings, and digitally on Kindle, Nook, and iPad. Threads West. ThreadsWestAmericanSaga.com.
My engineer is gesturing frantically at me. I think that means we're out of time. Don't miss next week's show, Agenda 21, what the UN has planned for you. Guarantee you, you won't like it. And the Diebold voting machine. Oh, yes. 5% of the precincts in the United States and expanding have them. And in the swing states, do you think that's a coincidence? Well, let me tell you, it's not. And if you don't want the election stolen, I'll tell you what to do next week about how to get your congressman on the stick to end this voter fraud before it occurs. An ounce of prevention is worth 10 pounds of cure. Until then, this is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the right side. It's been a pleasure as always. Have a terrific week.
For more information about Reed and his work, please click on the globe in front of you on the webtalkradio.net page. You can also click on his book, Land for Love and Money, and his new best-selling historical Western series, Threads West, an American Saga. Watch for the second volume of the saga, Maps of Fate, coming soon. And, of course, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archives to catch up. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed L. Rosenthal on the Right Side.